Welcome to this podcast of the Hopi Music Repatriation Project. My name is Trevor Reed, and I'm the lead researcher for the project. Today we're talking with Lee Wayne Lomayastiwa, research assistant at the Hopi Tribe's Cultural Preservation Office. In addition to his duties at the Cultural Preservation Office, Lee Wayne is an active traditional leader at Shungopavi Village, rancher, and father. Lee Wayne's work to bring Hopi cultural property back home has had a major impact on the continuing dialogue over repatriation, and you will find his name cited in numerous articles and books on the subject. Over the course of 2 weeks this summer, Lee Wayne and I worked through nearly 120 Hopi songs in efforts to identify them and make plans for their return to individuals, ceremonial societies, clans, and villages on Hopi. These songs come from the Laura Bolton World Music Collection currently housed at Columbia University's Center for Ethnomusicology. I had the chance to speak with Lee Wayne at the Hopi Cultural Preservation Office following our work and field sessions with Hopi elders. Well, thank you, Lee Wayne, for being here with us today. I wanted to begin our conversation by talking about Hopi music and Hopi traditional song and the role that it plays in Hopi life. I was wondering if you could give us a little bit of background and tell us about what role traditional songs play for Hopis.
Traditional songs for Hopis play a real, you know, important role where these songs were learned from time, as they say, time immemorial, from way back when our ancestors were even migrating, and the songs have been handed down from generation to generation through the priests that are in charge of these different ceremonies. And when it's time for the priest to perform their ceremony, you know, they have the songs. And when we do our ceremonies here, it's, you know, it's not just for us Hopis. It's for all the little insects that crawl the earth, the animals, the plants, the birds, the butterflies, everything. And even all of the people that live on the earth, even you, whoever's listening to this. We pray for everything in this world, even the stars, you know, the galaxies. Yeah, it's just everything.
And going along with that, a lot of times songs are created new for given dances, is that right?
Yes, a lot of the songs for butterfly dances, usually there are certain people that have that gift of making songs, composing songs. They're the ones that, you know, sing it. And sometimes if it's a good one, then they use it all the time. So, but it's, you know, for everybody.
You know, one of the reasons why we wanted you especially to talk to those who are listening today is that you have experience with receiving materials, receiving repatriated materials of various kinds. I was wondering if you could take me through what typically happens to a collection when a museum or a university contacts you wanting to return materials such as these.
Under NACPRA, which was passed in 1991, it gives the museums it tells the museums to send what they have of every tribe, like inventory. And the Hopi tribe, we work with over 400 museums throughout the United States. And when we first started receiving these notices, you know, it was just everything was on paper. Mm-hmm. So we would go down, you know, computer printouts about 4 inches thick, and then we would just go through them, and then we would write down ritual sacred items. We would make a list, and then we would send it to the museums to have them send us copies of their records, pictures, anything. When we received those, then we usually I would go out into the public and try to identify where each item comes from. And then in this case with the songs, once we receive them here, and then we know which village it comes from. So we do a the repatriation comes from the museum with paperwork, and then we, once we receive them here, then we do a transfer of custody to the village from the tribe. And then they'll put that item back into their the societies and their ceremonies and reuse them again. I think with this one, the songs, I think it's good that a lot of the songs are coming back home, because in listening to the songs, there's only like certain parts that people know, and there's more to it.
We've been going over these songs for several days now, 120 altogether that are in the Laura Bolton collection. And I wondered if you wouldn't mind sharing, you know, your experience with maybe one or two of the songs you thought were interesting, or songs that might really resonate with people here on Hopi. Would you share something with us?
I think the one that I kind of really like, the last one we interviewed was Wilton, and or listened to, and he identified this one song as coming from a story where a twin, a boy and a girl in the village of Hotvela, were knowledgeable in songs that would make their crops grow, and other people weren't, you know, looking to them, you know, they didn't really appreciate, or and they were making fun of them and stuff like that. And so they just left the village, and that song that they sung, you know, it's kind of different, and that's, you know, it just kind of gets to you, and that's one of the songs that, you know, I really like. And the other part is too, where some of the songs, or you know, the social dances songs are, you know, it's for everybody, and this, you know, they're made to be funny. So and the songs of how they were composed were good and funny, and you know.
Right, yeah, especially, and say, I think there were a couple of buffalo.
Yeah, buffalo, the buffalo dance songs
were pretty funny.
Yeah, and they are, you know the sometimes they say that the buffalo dance, the male part, the male one is you know, there's a boy and a girl, so you can also, you know, do funny stuff out there too.
Interesting.
In the plaza.
Well, and so, you know, so we have this collection of songs, and I should also mention that, you know, in both of those instances where we had the song about the twins and also the buffalo songs, that both of these songs had a certain amount of history to them too. Mm-hmm. And that could be very valuable, you know, picking up these items of history that many people maybe don't know about or don't remember. But are still remembered by people in the villages,
yeah.
Especially by Wilton, who was our consultant at Hotvela.
Yeah, just by, you know, listening to some of the songs, and he identified, you know, oh, this is from here, or this is about this thing. He can you know, interpret that, where it came from, what was the, you know, the purpose of the song. It was interesting meeting with him and getting his input on some of these songs and where they came from. And also just by him listening to it and identifying the person that was, you know, singing the song. So he knew the people that sang these songs.
So I want to ask also in follow-up, why do you think it's important now for our people to be receiving these songs?
I think it's really important that these songs come back, because it doesn't belong out in the museums. A lot of the ceremonies that we perform here, you know, there's some of the songs that are missing. It's kind of like the missing links, where this song comes after this one, this song comes after this one, and maybe these, one of these songs are those ones that they don't sing anymore. And in order for the ceremony to go the full 100%, you know, they need these songs to come back so they can put them back into their perspective places, so they can be sung, and like prayers for everything, like I said, every living thing on this earth. With that, people, you know, the rains will come, make our crops grow. We're here living in a dry area where we have dry farming. The only kind of moisture that our crops rely on is the moisture from the rain. So that's what we try to bring here, and maybe that's the missing link that'll bring these rains here to Hopi land.
You know, I guess in closing, I wanted to ask a little bit further about the benefit of these songs for people. You mentioned completing the ceremonies is one really big advantage. What about other opportunities, whether it be educational or language or any of those? What benefits could come from songs like this?
I think the benefits that could come from here is on the songs is a lot of the little, you know, the school age kids. Now, most of them really don't talk Hopi. And with some of these songs, maybe they'll learn. And also with some of the songs, like we listen to, you know, it tells a different direction. Some of the kids don't know that. So, like, for instance, that Guyamsi song that does the North Gwinnia, West Dawang, that Kyak South, Wupak East. You know, it tells those. So maybe, I mean, it's like a learning tool where you sing it and you know which direction is which. And maybe it'll be a learning tool. It'll teach the kids the different, you know, the languages. I mean, of how to say certain things and put it into a curriculum or something. And, you know, songs are a learning tool also. The little kids here, maybe they'll learn, say certain words. So that's...
Yeah, it sounds like there are many opportunities for learning with these songs, and especially with education, with language acquisition, with helping the kids to learn cultural knowledge and things like that. One other thing that came up that I thought was really interesting when we were out with Wilton, the consultant from Ho'opala, he said that, you know, these songs, they're good material for creating new songs. And I wonder what you think about that.
Like he was saying that, you know, you can go with the same rhythm, you know, and then once you're making a song, you can borrow from one song and make it into your song, put it into your song, and then make a full one like that. Because some of these songs aren't sung all the way through. But, you know, a lot of the songs, you know, they borrow from one song and put it into their song to make... the whole song. So that's what Wilton was talking about, to borrow certain parts of a song and making a full song for either a butterfly or Katsina dance or something like that. Even you know, I mean, like the Shoso dances, or even putting a part of a lullaby into either a buffalo dance or something like that.
Oh, that's really interesting. So they can keep living on. You know, these songs can keep living on in different ways.
Yeah, in different ways that, you know, however you put the song, you know, hopefully they'll keep using it and use it until it's, you know, there's no more dances.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a tremendous learning experience for me as well. And so I wanted to thank you on behalf of all of our listeners for contributing to this project and for helping us here. So again, thank you. It's Li Wayne Lomayastua. And we thank you for your help and support of the project.
Okay. Thank you. Kokwa.
Thank you for tuning into this Hopi Music Repatriation Project podcast. For more information, visit hopimusic.wordpress.com or visit the Columbia University Center for Ethnomusicology website at ethnocentered.org.